3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
And strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Thanks for being here once again as we celebrate podcast number 200. Many of you were there for number one, and here we are at 200. Hard to believe, but yes, we are here. We're going to celebrate with a wild game yesterday. The Mariners beating the Tigers in thrilling fashion, 11-9 in a complete seesaw affair. Up and down, roller coaster, however you want to put it. It was a wild one at Comerica Park. The Mariners end up beating the Tigers. So right now, even with the series, we'll talk about what comes up tonight a little bit more. We're also going to celebrate with Aaron Goldsmith. He was the guest on the first, and he'll be the guest for number 200 as well. He also, we'll talk about it a little bit in our conversation coming up, but he had a very interesting conversation, a very funny conversation with Brendan Ryan the other day in New York. You're going to hear that. He's got a couple of hilarious stories to tell. So we have that coming up on the podcast as well. So a ton to get to. Before we get to the Tigers game, though, little warning, little forewarning. Tomorrow, day baseball, early start, 10 a.m. As you know, sometimes we take the podcast off with the early start, and that's exactly what we're going to do. So no podcast for day baseball from Detroit. Should be a good one. Iwakuma against Price. It's a prime matchup, 10:08 first pitch that morning. But let's get to it. And what was just a crazy game, the Mariners, they jumped out early. Shane Green, who has really struggled against lefties, and that is the perfect recipe for the Mariners as they jumped on Green early in this ball game, scoring four runs in the first inning.
2-1 pitch to Cano, swinging a chopper back up the middle, way to his right, diving Kinsler, can't get to it, a base hit. Seager rounding third, he will score. Up of the ball is Anthony Gose, the throw will go into third. Robinson Cano with a quick two hopper right back up the middle. Kyle Seager scores easily. Down to second goes Cruz, and the Mariners have an early 1-0 lead. The 0-1 pitch. Swing and a ground ball back up the middle, and it gets on by Kinsler. Here comes Smith rounding third. He will score. Up with the ball is Ghost, the center fielder, and tosses it into second base. Brad Miller indeed will keep the merry-go-round going as Smith scores an RBI single for Brad Miller. And it's now the Mariners 4 and the Tigers nothing. How about that?
Yeah, 4 spot in the first inning. Great start for the M's. Detroit answers back with 1 in the second. But then Nelson Cruz really gets into one in the third and hits it a long, long, long ways.
The 1-2. Swing of this is hammered on a line to center field. Goes going back, and there it goes, the home run. And that was hit a ton. Nelson Cruz, baseball destroyed here in downtown Detroit. Dead straightaway center, 420-plus feet. And the Mariners add on. It's 5-1 in the top of the third.
420 feet dead center to Detroit, and he cleared it by plenty. That thing was absolutely mashed. Nelson Cruz showing off the strength. And in typical Cruz fashion, he's so funny because he's such a humble guy about what he does on the field. And it's funny when you talk to him about it after the ball game because he'll just kind of shy away about whatever he does. He is all for talking about his teammates. He gets really excited about that. But when it comes to his exploits on the field, he's not as comfortable talking about it. He's such a humble guy. And it's funny, after the ball game, as they try and draw out, how deep was that home run? How did it feel to hit that crushing home run to center field? It's pretty funny how it sounded.
Just barely went out, no?
It's 420 to center field.
Yeah,
near the second deck of the batter's eye.
Oh, okay. It was a good swing, you know, and a good thing we win. So I'm happy to contribute.
You had a good view of JD's home run as well.
Yeah, that was a joke. I was more impressed.
Can you compare the home run that you hit maybe to some other ones, like the one that you hit the train or at Safeco Field?
Homers are homers, you know. If they go for one, whatever it goes, you know, they're just homers.
The manager said he saw your swing yesterday and felt you were getting close. Did you feel that?
Yeah, no doubt. I feel like it's getting closer. Every at bat, you know, I just a matter of time that I feel comfortable just driving the ball. I feel like I need to drive the ball the other way. You know, one of those line drives and it'll be there.
I got to be honest. If I hit a ball as far as he hit that one to center field, I am not 100% sure my reaction would be a homer is a homer. I'd be dancing on the ceiling. I mean, that thing was absolutely mauled. So the Mariners off to a great start. It's 5-1 at that point, but the Tigers start chipping away. They score two in the bottom of the third. So at that point, it's 5-3. And then a big four spot in the bottom of the fifth inning by the Tigers. They take control of the ball game at that point, but then the Mariners start to return. They score one in the sixth inning. Tigers get one more in the bottom of the seventh. Just the seesaw affair, the tug of war going on. And then the eighth inning, Feliz on the hill, longtime Mariners nemesis who has dominated the M's through the years as a Texas Ranger. He's on the mound trying to bridge the gap to the ninth inning. And the Mariners load the bases. They score a run on a wild pitch, and that would set the stage for Franklin Gutierrez, one monster swing of the bat.
The 1-1 on the way, swing and a fly ball into right field and deep. Martinez going back. Goodbye, baseball. Grandma, get out the rye bread and mustard. It is grand salami time. Holy smokes. Franklin Gutierrez with a pinch hit. Grand slam here in the top of the eighth inning. And the Mariners now lead by a score of 11-8. Can you believe it?
Unbelievable. Franklin Gutierrez, a grand slam in the eighth inning. Things will get interesting in the eighth. The bottom of the frame, Detroit with Fernando Rodney on, would score a run. Carson Smith dispatched to get the final out in the eighth. And then in the ninth, smooth sailing as usual for the M's closer.
The next offer on the way, swinging a ground ball to Miller at short. He's got it. Underhand toss to Cano at second for the force on Castellanos, and this ball game is over. The Mariners come back and they win it. What a ball game tonight, 11-9 over the Tigers here in Detroit.
Feliz coming into this season, in all the years, 26 innings pitched, 7 hits, 1 double. In those 7 hits, no earned runs against the Mariners. This season, 4 1/3 innings, 9 hits, 7 earned runs. The Mariners making up for lost time against Feliz. And Franklin Gutierrez, what a great moment that was, swatting the grand slam and just everything he's been through to get back to the show, to get back to the Mariners, to get back to the big leagues, everything he went through, and to have that one big moment. Man, that must have felt great. Shannon Dreher caught up with Franklin Gutierrez after the ball game.
Down here with the hero of the game, there's no doubt about it, Franklin Gutierrez. And Franklin, you come in, a 1-1 pitch, you hit that ball hard. What are you thinking as you're hitting first base? We see the hand in the air. What's going through your mind at that moment?
Well, it was an amazing moment because I knew that he doubled pretty good. As soon as I saw the right field not moving at all, so I knew the ball was out. So, you know, it was a pretty exciting moment just to score some runs there and, you know, and help the team score some runs.
You're on the bench for the start of the game. You're watching it all as it all unfolds. And, you know, slugfest. It's just back and forth with the Tigers. Things are a little bit bleak for a while. When do you have an idea that you're coming in and who you're going to face? Neftali Feliz has been very tough against this team.
Yeah, you know, when you're on the bench, you just have to be prepared because after the 15 inning, anything can happen. So I just started warming up, and I had the opportunity in the eighth to come in and pinch hit for Taylor. And, you know, Neftali Feliz, he was throwing really hard. I mean, he was throwing 96, 97. I was looking for his fastball. I wasn't looking for anything else, and I just put a good swing on the ball.
You found his fastball and you went opposite field with that. What does that kind of tell you about where you're at right now?
Well, you know what? I think it's a bless. I mean, just I'm back on the game again, and you know, in a different role right now. But I'm really happy to be here. I think I have a little more experience now, and just trying to be relaxed at the home play, and you know, let the thing happen.
What's your favorite part of being back right now? It's been such a long road for you.
I think it's just be back with Seattle again. I really love this team, and be back with my friends and you know, all the, you know, all the fans in Seattle, and I'm really, you know, I appreciate all this.
Okay, if you want to pause the podcast right now and just go back a little bit and listen really closely to that last discussion with Franklin Gutierrez, and he had a lot of great things to say, and I'll talk about the importance of that in a second, but let's get to this. Listen closely in the background, because I think you're going to hear Frank Sinatra singing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which is an odd thing to hear over the speakers at Comerica Park after a ball game that the Mariners win on July 21st. But, you know, whatever. So just, I guess, go back and listen again, because I swear that's what I heard. Maybe I'm crazy, but that's what I was hearing. But what a big moment for Franklin Gutierrez, and you heard it there, the emotion. You saw it with the fist in the air rounding first base, and a big, big win for the M's. They have this series even now and still a chance to take the series. Today, Mike Montgomery on the hill, 4 o'clock from Detroit. He'll take on Anibal Sanchez. Montgomery, of course, he's been sensational this year. 4-3 with a 2.51 ERA so far this season. He missed Detroit when these teams hooked up not too long ago. Last time out, Montgomery in New York went 6, gave up 3 earned runs. He walked 3. He fanned 9 in the ballgame. So he'll look to continue his role against Anibal Sanchez, who's had a pretty interesting year for the Tigers. Sanchez this season, 9-7 with a 4.55 ERA. He's had some times where he's really pitched well. Other times, he's really struggled. Mariners faced him on July 8th. He went 6 1/3, gave up 5 hits, 3 earned. He did walk 5 and struck out 6. The Mariners had some chances. They couldn't quite get to him, and Detroit won that game. In fact, Detroit, they have won the last 7 times he has taken the hill after dropping 4 in a row when he pitched. So there you go. He's been better as of late. And some games he's really pitched well. Had a 2-start sequence. Cincinnati shut him out for 9 innings. The Cubs shut him out for 7 2/3. So he's been better after a couple of rocky starts early in the season in April and in May. So Mariners a chance to take control of the series. Montgomery and Sanchez tonight from Detroit. Who knows what we'll see after the slugfest last night. And now to celebrate podcast number 200, we're going to welcome back Aaron Goldsmith.
To the 6, all even at 2, and for the play-by-play, here's Aaron.
They're booing me, Rick.
Not you.
That was right on cue.
If they knew you, they would never boo you, buddy.
1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Oh, did he get tied up? That was dirty from Felix.
Picks up the dirties, washes them, and brings them back fresh.
And we got Aaron Goldsmith here, hair just glistening in the sunlight, so it's pretty distracting.
I'm a happily married man with a child on the way, and I love King Perry. That is me in a nutshell, and I talk about the Mariners on the radio every night, so
kind of let it eat.
Oh, breaking news, the bees are still there. You look up above the mound, and it looks like you're staring up to the mothership, like you could be beamed up at any moment. That white roof with all the circles and the scaffolding.
Way out of here to right field! Thank you very much!
Well, now we get to welcome back to the show. He's been on every single one thus far, but the first guest on the first episode, so it's only fitting on number 200, we welcome in Aaron Goldsmith. Aaron, how does it feel to be here for number 200?
Gee, man, the problem is that now I feel like I'm obligated to come on for 300, 400. And you know, the bottom line is, Gary, I mean, I've been talking with you about this podcast before it even started. And privately, I remember thinking to myself, he's not even going to get 10 of these things in, let alone 100 or even 200. So, I mean, hats off to you, G-Money, for, you know, making this thing at least tread water, if not take off, as the most popular podcast in Major League Baseball. So tip of the cap to you, my friend. Well, well done. We knew this would be a hit. I just needed your touch to it, and I know all the listeners every day who download and listen appreciate it. So big congratulations to you.
I think it is the most popular Seattle Mariners podcast that I host. I think it is the one.
Okay, I'm glad the qualifier that you host.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
You do win it now.
Well, I'm talking to you. It's late, and that was something tonight. That was a wild one.
Well, let's see. Yeah, it's a quarter after midnight. So good morning. Good morning from Detroit. You know, that was that game tonight or last night. By the time people are listening to this, was probably the best worst game that I've seen in a long time. Because the Mariners seemed just buried for dead a number of times after doing, well, we all saw it, four runs in the first inning. And somehow, here comes Gutierrez in a grand slam, and I don't think anybody necessarily saw that coming. But, gosh, you know, the Tigers, their bullpen has just been atrocious. Their starting pitching has been atrocious. If you could combine the Mariners and the Tigers, you'd have a pretty darn good team. You might have a first-place team with the Mariners pitching, especially in the rotation, and then the Tigers offense. But that was an absolutely bizarre and wild game, and I think it had just about everything, including the longest nine-inning game of the season for the Mariners.
And they get to Feliz, who has absolutely dominated the Mariners through the years, a guy that just he'd come in for the Rangers just 1-2-3, zip, zip, zip. They didn't touch him for years coming into the season, and they get him for five tonight, just the cherry on top of the bizarre Sunday.
Yeah, I thought the only thing I could think about, because I know you and I have talked about the Feliz numbers for a number of times, and a lot of those numbers came before I was in town with the Mariners, but I certainly learned quickly that he's really dominated Mariners hitters since coming to Texas, as it was. But, you know, the only thing I could think after Goody hit that grand slam and Feliz cost up five runs, which turns out to be career high, as we found out afterwards, is that if somebody had told you back in, like, 2011 or 2012 or whenever it was, hey, one day the Mariners are going to get Feliz for the highest career run total ever, you would never believe it. And it happened tonight. And unfortunately, it happened at a time where the Mariners needed those runs more than they ever have against the Leafs, probably, or at least in recent memory. So, that was just the Mariners has, as you know, Gary, have had so many close games.
Yeah.
And the game last night was a close one, as it turned out. But just to be able to put up 11 runs, because I'll tell you, I'll be honest, Rick was doing the play-by-play, and it was in the, I think at this point, it was before the Grand Slam, and the Tigers had eight runs, and what I was thinking to myself as Rick's doing the play-by-play is the only way for the Mariners to win this game is to get nine runs at the time. And the Mariners had whatever it was, maybe six or seven, and I went on the play index on Baseball Reference, and I'm looking up how many times the Mariners got a nine runs, and there's been like three teams in baseball who have scored nine runs fewer times than the Mariners. I mean, it's just the Mariners are the bottom. I mean, nine runs is a ton of runs, and it just hasn't happened for the Mariners that often this year. And you can say that about a lot of teams, but especially the Mariners. And so I'm thinking this is going to take a miracle for the Mariners to get nine. And as it turns out, they got even more than that. So it was hopefully a landmark win for the Mariners that can get a little momentum, because they need to string together back-to-back wins for the first time in a while. And who knows? Maybe last night was the start of it.
That was a nice moment for Franklin Gutierrez, too. You could see the emotion pumping his fist around first base and what has been a long road back. And that was a cool moment, I thought. No matter what happens the rest of the way, That's one of those moments, I think, in the season you can look back on. Of course, Mark Lowe has had his moments, too. He's had a long road back as well. But those are some shining moments this season for the Mariners.
I thought Shannon did a really nice job interviewing Goody after the game. And we waited till after Angie on the route telecast got him. And then Shannon stepped in line. And I thought Goody was just incredibly honest and heartfelt with what he told Shannon on the post-game interview and just how much contributing in a major way in a close game, in a game that from a psychological standpoint, gosh, the Mariners, I hate to say had to have because it wasn't a must win, but you know what I mean. The Mariners, gosh, they didn't want to fall behind 0-2 in the series on the road in Detroit and start the second half of the season like that after dropping 2 out of 3 in New York. And you're right, Gary, the emotions that Goody had talking about that grand slam after the game, you just felt so good for this guy. And you hope we can continue to see him contribute. And he's stayed healthy so far. And he's proven he can still be a productive player.
Completely off topic, but you've made your way now around the American League. You've seen all the ballparks. Where do you put the ballpark in Detroit?
It's funny. I was talking to Blow about this like an hour before the pregame show, before game one of the series. And what I said to Blow, and we talked to Kremen. We brought Kremen in on this too, because as you know, Kevin does, I don't think a lot of people know this. Kevin, once the regular season is over with, he gets contracted by ESPN Radio, and he does normally a couple of postseason series, and then typically I think he's done the World Series, like maybe the last 5 years, 4 or 5 years, and he does like wireless microphones for ESPN Radio or whatever they might want him to do. But he's on that crew. And I was talking to Kevin. I said, how great is this ballpark in a playoff game? Because there's just something about Comerica. I can't even describe what it is, that it just seems like it can get a buzz in it with the fan base as good as any ballpark in the American League. And I really just like the view from the booth, how the park's laid out. It's a pretty setting. And Kev was the first to say that it's an awesome ballpark with a sold out crowd in October in the postseason. And Blow was commenting how much he likes it too. I mean, obviously it's an enormous ballpark. It's a more open ballpark in terms of the seating bowl. It's more open than it is vertical, which typically I don't like that, but here it really seems to work. And I'll tell you, for as much as the city of Detroit has had problems, certainly economically and politically and what else, and the area around Comerica is not a good area in downtown Detroit. Man, I mean, you've seen it, you've heard it on the broadcast, people have seen it on the telecast. I mean, they packed that place for a Monday and a Tuesday game, and they got over 30,000 there, and they're always up there in attendance. I really like the feel of Comerica Park. I think it's a beauty.
Yeah, I do too. I kind of miss the look of old Tiger Stadium and the potential roof shots from time to time and that overhang in right field, but I think they did a good job with the new ballpark.
Rick has talked about the overhang a number of times. I think that is bizarre. I mean, right field, over the fence. I mean, it's just a ding. There it is. Yeah, I mean, Tiger Stadium was certainly a beautiful thing, a quirky thing in some ways, and a historic ballpark. But I think they did a really nice job with Comerica, and it's nice to see a city. Now, granted, they've had tremendous success, the Tigers have, but it's nice to see a city where things aren't necessarily going all that well from an economic standpoint. But, man, they're out there every night packing Comerica, and it's a fun place to call a game. It really is.
Okay, take Safeco out of the mix, and take soft serve out of the mix, so we're not including soft serve in this. But what are your favorite ballparks?
By the way, Yankee Stadium, best soft serve we've had in baseball this year.
That's good.
But it's also the most expensive press meal. It's $13 for the press meal at Yankee Stadium. But for the soft serve, I'll pay for it. For me, there's no doubt that in the American League, my favorite ballpark to broadcast from is Fenway Park. And I'm guessing that's probably most broadcasters' favorites, just because, I mean, obviously the history speaks for itself, oldest ballpark, over 100 years old, but there's just the broadcast booth you're hanging right over home plate. You're a little high. You're on the fourth floor, so you're a little higher up than you might want to be, but you're just, oh man, you're right on top of home plate. You're looking down, and there's David Ortiz, you know, there's Nelson Cruz. You're right on top of them. And you got the monster to the left. They normally, obviously, Fenway a couple of years ago, the sellout streak coming to an end. But let's face it, more times than not, that place is packed. You get a little bit of a view of the skyline, the Prudential Building off to the right. And there's nothing like seeing a home run over the monster in person, especially when it's hit by a Mariner, that is just awesome. And I don't really enjoy being in Fenway Park for the hours leading up to first pitch because it's just a zoo. They run so many tours through there. It's so congested and compact. It's just not an easy place to work. The clubhouse is the size of a hotel room. the dugouts are packed. But once 7:10 comes and you're up in the booth and you're looking out on that, it's just a gorgeous sight. And I know you're going to have a chance to call some games there later in August for the Mariners. And I'm so thrilled you're going to have a chance to go there because it's just any baseball fan should go there to see a game. But if you can call a game there, it's just off the charts cool.
Yeah, I can't wait. I've seen two games there. One, it was the first time I've ever been in rain outside at a Major League Baseball game. So that was fascinating. No, it was great, though, because I was watching the Blue Jays and Red Sox, and Pedro was pitching. And just like fans in Seattle go nuts for Felix now, that place was a zoo for Pedro at that time. I mean, he was locked in. He was at his prime. He was rolling. That was fun. And then I saw Jeff Fusaro pitch a complete gem against the Red Sox and shut them down completely, which is easier said than done, especially for a lefty at Fenway Park. So I've been to Fenway a couple times, but I can't wait. August, it's going to be a lot of fun.
I remember last year we were there late in the season, and it was on a Sunday, and it was a gorgeous Sunday morning, and we had Mariners Magazine coming up at 11, and it was like 9:30, and I was pretty well prepped. My scorebook was filled out, and I looked at and the ball. This is one of the greatest things about our job. Fenway Park was completely empty. Nobody was taking BP. The only people in the ballpark were stadium employees. And I looked out to right field where the Williams seat is, right, the red seat where Ted Williams pulled that home run to right field, and it's just a mile away. I thought, you know, I got to get out there. So I left the press box, left the booth, walked all the way out to the Ted Williams red seat, sat down, just looked out at Fenway Park for 5 minutes from the Williams seat, and it's a beautiful Sunday morning in downtown Boston. Then I made my way over to Pesky's pole, sat down by Pesky's pole for another 5 or 10 minutes, and I remember just thinking, gosh, how lucky am I? I mean, I remember having the thought, I'm getting paid to sit in the Williams seat right now. I mean, this is my job, is to sit here. And fortunately, I had all my work had done at that point. But it was just, it's a very romantic thing to get to. And the same would be said about Wrigley. And hey, I think, and this was the intention for the Mariners, there's no doubt that for Safeco Field, that was a ballpark built to be like a Fenway, to be around for 100 years.
The last.
And there's going to be a time when people are saying the same thing about Safeco, because I was talking to Blow about this today. Actually, I don't think there's a ballpark in baseball that does a better job of just maintaining the infrastructure at Safeco Field. It looks like it was built 5 years ago, just from a standpoint of how clean they keep it, the upkeep to it, the maintenance, they keep improving it. And I think I'm so grateful to be able to call Safeco Field our home ballpark, because it's just, as you know, G-Man, it's just an awesome work environment. And, man, there's nothing like a summer night at Safeco Field, that's for sure.
No, no doubt. So I don't want to keep you too much longer here, but you mentioned Ted Williams. So you got such a great story about Mickey Mantle that I played on the podcast yesterday. It's so fun, the stories that you get, your role in the pregame show. You talk to the opponents, whether it's broadcaster or players or whatever, and some of the stories that you get are just fantastic. The Mickey Mantle one from the other day was sensational. What have been your favorite stories the last couple of years? I know that's a tough question because there's been so many, but what have been your favorite conversations? from the opponent's perspective?
Boy, this is good. This is tough. I'll start off. I'll buy myself a little bit of time and say that the chance to talk to people on the other side is one of the most challenging and yet one of the most enjoyable parts of my job. And I'll say challenging from the standpoint of it really takes a lot of forethought before you get to the ballpark or before you go down to the clubhouse to really research and think about what you want to ask these people, because in some cases you're going to get one shot at it depending on who it is. Like, for example, I put in a reservation, as I like to put it, with Al Kaline yesterday.
Yeah.
Who's at the ballpark all the time, to try to interview him tonight before the game. And it's a tentative reservation, as maybe he would say, but he said he might be available. So it's one of those things where, okay, now today, Wednesday, I'm going to have to spend a lot of time, you know, thinking about Al Kaline, because you're going to get one shot to interview Al Kaline and you don't want to blow it. Okay, some of the great conversations that come to mind, and I know you're going to agree with this one, is Dennis Eckersley.
Oh, yeah.
Eckersley was just the way the Eckersley thing worked out. He was doing the game for Nesson last year at Safeco. I didn't know he'd be there. Jerry Remy is normally the color analyst for the Red Sox, but it was Eckersley who made the trip. And I'm in the visitor's dugout 2 hours, 3 hours before the game. And, oh, my gosh, there is Dennis Eckersley. And I'm legitimately nervous to talk to this guy. And I just go up to him and say, hey, Dennis, I'm Aaron with Mariners Radio. Do you have a few minutes? And he's like, absolutely. And he gave me the best 10-minute interview. And I know, G-Man, you've used a lot of the pieces he's talked about, Felix.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just gold. I've got a real man crush on essentially any Hall of Famer. So anytime I get a chance to talk to a Hall of Famer, I do. Burt Blyleven was probably the first Hall of Famer I interviewed, who does Twins TV. I remember the great line from Burt when I asked him, Burt, you threw so many complete games, so many innings. What was your secret? And he said, Aaron, my secret was my large derriere. He credited exactly that, for being able to pitch so many innings. So that was a real thrill to talk to Blyleven and see how casual he is, to say the least. I'll go with a sad note. My first year at the Mariners in 2013, my first year in the big leagues, I was in Tampa Bay and I saw Don Zimmer in the Rays dugout. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's Don Zimmer. And I was looking for somebody to interview, and I thought, I gotta talk to Zim. But then, you know what it's like here. I mean, I'll be honest, you get a little scared.
Yeah.
Because you're like, his career is over 50 There's years so in the much. Majors
right,
in
right.
every single role. And it's like, you get one chance to interview Zim. As I said, you don't want to blow it, and you want to actually think about it a little bit. And I was too nervous just to flip on the recorder and say, here we go with Zim in 3-2-1, and just not make a fool of myself. And so I wanted to kind of collect my thoughts, and I didn't see him the next day, and I didn't see him the next day after that. And of course, sadly, he passed away the following year, and that really taught me a good life lesson in this line of work, which is, man, you know, if you get it if you can, because you might not know if there's going to be a next time. Because when I heard that Zim passed away last year, gosh, that image of him in the dugout was the first thing I thought of, that I didn't get him. And it would have been a real thrill to be able to say that I talked to Don Zimmer, and I never did. Terry Francona is certainly one of my favorite guys to talk with. He's just a riot every time. And this year we got to talk to him about managing Michael Jordan in AA Birmingham, which was just hysterical. And then, you know, one of the things that I've started doing that's been a little bit different, that I've kind of learned from some, I don't know if mistakes is the right word, but I've just kind of gained better perspective on it, is when I talk to managers, or especially when we have guys in interleague play, I really have cared a lot less now about talking to a guy like Bruce Bochy about 5 minutes on what the Giants are doing in 2015 in the month of June. And we just don't get to talk to Bochy but once every 3 or 4 years.
Right.
And so that's when you can really get a chance to learn about Bruce Bochy as a player, and his managing career began in the Northwest. I mean, he's got the great story of having the essentially the biggest helmet in the history of baseball. And he's got some great stories along with his helmet, if you can believe it. I did the same thing last year with Jimmy Rollins when we saw Rollins in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's a good one.
A former MVP and talking about the glory years for the Phillies. I mean, things like that. I guess I've really learned just to kind of broaden the scope a little bit. And that's what I hope to do with K-Line. And I put in a reservation today, or I guess last night at this point, with David Price to talk to him so we can play it on the game on Thursday. And, you know, there's a lot of things you can talk to David Price about other than just being an all-star this year, kind of bigger picture stuff. And, I mean, you and I are kind of think along the same lines. Those are the things that, you know, when Price retires and he's, who knows, could be a Hall of Famer if he keeps doing what he's doing. I mean, those are the things that you want to, like, go back and hear and talk about, the big picture stuff 20 years from now. 20 years from now, who cares about it, you know, whatever it might be, a month of – April when he has a 2-3 ERA. I mean, you want to know the big picture things, how he thinks about the game and the stories along those lines. So it is one of the greatest parts of my job, and I'm so grateful that the Mariners pregame show allows us to get perspective from the other side, because you learn more about your team talking to guys on the other side than you do at times talking to guys on your side, because that's a perspective that only the other clubhouse has.
No, I totally agree, and I've told you this a million times. You do such a fantastic job with those. I love getting the other perspective. We talk about it with Felix in particular all the time, but also the stories as well. I'm a baseball fan. I love the game. I love the history, and some of the stories you bring out are just fantastic. So can't wait to play and continue to play.
Well, I appreciate it, and it's good to have the podcast, because, as you know, if we didn't have the podcast, they're all kind of one and done. And yeah, so It's good to have a platform that we can kind of recycle some of these things. Oh, I'll tell you, the best story was Brendan Ryan being late to Shea Stadium.
Oh, I mean that. Because I haven't played that yet. I'm going to play it right after this. I'm going to play it right
perfect.
After this.
Okay.
It is so
there you go.
Great.
Well,
I
segued it perfect. It's the best baseball story I think maybe you'll ever hear, at least the funniest one. And I even said to Brendan, I asked him if he'd talk about it, and I said, Brendan, I'll make you a deal. I won't play it anywhere until like 2 years after you retire. And he said, oh, come on, you can play it whenever you want. Brendan is maybe my favorite guy to ever play baseball.
Yeah.
He's just the greatest, and I'm glad you're going to get a chance to play it.
That's the best. Well, I kept you way longer than I wanted to, but the good thing is pregame starts in like an hour, so you have plenty of time.
it's always a pleasure to you, man. Hey, and once again, congrats on number 200. This is fantastic. You're the best at this. There's nobody that can do this like you do. And we're all very thankful, and we all reap the benefits of it.
Brendan, it is so good to see you, as always, and it's even better to see you healthy, activated from the disabled list. How are you feeling these days, Brendan?
Thank you. That's awful nice. I'm glad to put a uniform back on. It's been a really upside-down first half, you know. I mean, just one thing after another, and I don't think there have even been any repeats except for maybe the hamstring. So hopefully I got all that out of the way, and I got a – you know, I'm fresh for the second half and ready to go.
Now you are, it seems like, circumventing a age-old Yankees tradition or rule. You have the mustache.
Yeah, indeed.
But not the beard. You're looking very Don Mattingly-like. Oh, this is a fine look for you, Brendan.
Yeah.
How did this come about?
Well, it started in St. Louis. A few of the pitchers wanted to grow a mustache. And
is that the proper pronunciation?
Indeed, yes, of course it is. And so it kind of caught on a little bit. Of course, over there, it lasted for like a week and a half. We lost a couple games to Houston, and everyone got rid of it. And ironically, the same thing happened here. I think we lost a couple games against Tampa or Houston or something, and everyone got rid of it. But we did have a good couple weeks there when everyone was doing it, and I've done it almost every year since, and we can't go past the lips here.
Oh.
Yep, so no facial hair except for a finely groomed mustache, and I'm just enjoying it. My wife isn't, of course.
No.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of your wife, Sharon, she and you celebrating the birth of your first child in December. Congratulations on being a dad. What is that like for you, Brendan? Because I would think you'd be a pretty fun dad.
Well, let's just put it this way. My wife's outnumbered now. you as well, though. Congrats to you. Yeah, it's been great. He's 7 months. He rolls around. like crazy. Got to keep your eyes on him. And I don't know where he gets it from, but all he does is laugh all day. That's all he does. Just make eye contact and he's in tears. It's great.
Now, have you started with any type of baby hand drills or foot drills, footwork drills to get things going? I mean, we got to get the Gold Glove working early, don't we?
Yes, absolutely. Right. And you're onto something there. Yeah, he's got like this little hacky sack type thing. Nothing dangerous, but he strangleholds this thing. I mean, he's all about this little soft baseball thing and any kind of ball. That's what he wants his hands on. So definitely liking that. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Brendan, we're excited to catch up with you for so many reasons, but one is we have to get you telling us what I think is one of the best baseball blooper travel stories, clubhouse stories of all time.
Right.
And it happened when you were in New York, but you were with the Cardinals very early in your career. It's a complex story. We have the time if you do. Can you break it down for us?
It's a wild one. I've had some occurrences here in the city that weren't ideal pre-game time, and all of them having to do with cabs. This one, it was probably my sixth, seventh, eighth day in the show. Nervous as all can be, and I wake up late. I've got no friends on the team because nobody's within 6 years of my age. So anyway, I wake up late and I can't find my money clip. I can't find my cell phone. I don't know. Everything's just missing. I end up in the cab downstairs. It's like 3 o'clock-ish, 3:30, somewhere in there. I'm just in panic now because I should have been at the field probably for an hour or so ago.
Is this old Shea?
This is old Shea. Yeah, exactly. So I'm telling the cab driver, I need to get to Shea Stadium as fast as possible. Complete blank stare, like I'm talking another language. I said, okay.
You probably were.
I probably was, yeah. So I was like, all right, well, New York Mets. I'm like throwing colors, blue and orange. Jose Reyes. He's like, oh, okay. So we get, I don't know why that clicked, but we start going now. We're, of course, in traffic.
Right.
And I don't have my contacts in and no air conditioning in the cab. It's 1,000 degrees. Windows down, stop and go the whole way. Get to we're a couple blocks from the stadium. I look up and it's Yankee Stadium.
Gosh.
Now it's after 4, okay? We're in gridlock. I mean, this is my nightmare, right? And so I'm like super upset now. I've made myself clear. Let's go. We need to go to Yankee Stadium. Turn around, go the other way. Oh, I'm sorry, I had it backwards. We were at Yankee Stadium. We need to go to Shea. So we get to Shea. It's like 5 o'clock, 5:05, right? It stretches at what, 5:15? All right. I got 6 days in the show. Not looking good here.
And your manager is?
Tony La Russa, Hall of Fame, right? Yeah. So not ideal. I get in the clubhouse, and I'm shaking. I'm so nervous, you know? And who of course, the first person I see is Mark Mulder, super veteran, you know? Oh, no, right? He's going to wear me out. He's got the death stare going, and he wants $150, like fine money or whatever kind of thing. He's probably going to give it back to me, but I see Adam Kennedy over there staring at me, and I pull out a $100 gift card to Mike Shannon's, right?
Phenomenal steakhouse.
Yeah, in St. Louis, across the street from the stadium there. I pull out some Subway tokens and like 4 $1 bills, all adding up to $150. Not funny to him at all. Adam Kennedy loved it, though. That was the day we became friends. Anyway, so I get out to stretch, and they freeze all my stuff during stretch and all that stuff. They
dip it in
water. All clothes frozen, everything. What the problem was the next day, I'm skipping a few things here. You know, because Albert got me a new wardrobe to wear. That was nice of him.
Because your clothes were all frozen, literally.
Like frozen in weird shapes because that's how they froze. Right.
So Albert gave you clothes to wear home after the game that night.
Right. He got me like a trainer's shirt. And I don't know what I did with the pants, but I just didn't want Tony to know. Of course, he did know. But my stuff thawed out into my gamer, into my glove. My gamer. How could this be? I'm starting the next day against Oliver Perez, former Mariner. Yeah. And anyway, I'm using a 20-pound glove out there, But before all that, I had to try to get some weight out of it to dry out the water. And I'm double barrel, like blow drying my glove in the bathroom. And the next thing I know, blew a fuse. We lost all electricity in the clubhouse everywhere. Tony's yelling in his office. He can't use his access his computer. Like, everyone's going bananas. And there I am, stuck with two blow dryers in each hand. I mean, it's like, this doesn't get any worse for me, you know? And then I went out, hit my first homer that day in the 11th inning, and it was like, I guess I needed all that to get rid of the nerves, because it couldn't get any worse. I could only go up from there, you know what I mean?
Did Tony ever say anything to you about all of this two-day ordeal?
What could you say? What are you supposed to say to this kid? It's just, what an impression. What an impression. But it was, you know what, we all ended up laughing about it. They embraced me, and that's really all you could do. I mean, what are you supposed to say, you know?
And, Brendan, what about your first travel day here as a member of the Yankees? Because there was maybe not quite as epic of a failure, but it wasn't pretty.
No, it wasn't good either. Yeah, that was our first day game getting traded here. Maybe my first game or first home game, something like that. I end up in Coney Island. It's a 1 o'clock game. I'm in Coney Island, and it's like 11:30 or so, something like that. I don't know where I'm going, what I'm doing.
You're taking the subway? Okay,
right, yeah. I was supposed to take the 4 train uptown. I end up on like the 5 train downtown or something. I don't know. I get in and it's like just before 12:15 or something. And I have my best game as a Yankee. So something about just being a circus pregame, I'm in my element, I guess.
That's not surprising.
No, I know. It fits, right? It fits, yeah.
Brendan, it's so good to see you, man. And thank you for the time. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you. Thanks for the time.
Likewise. Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
See you later!